views expressed on this program are those of the hosts, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of this station, its management, or other advertisers. You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio.
Moms, are you ready to become enlightened, empowered, and stress-free? Well, get ready because you are about to tune into vibrant, powerful moms helping everyday women create an extraordinary life with Debbie Pokornik. Each week, Debbie discusses topics to help you become self-aware, inspired, and on track to create the life you crave. It's time to stop settling and start thriving. And it all begins now on Transformation Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Vibrant Powerful Moms Show, a podcast focused on helping you realign with your vibrant, powerful self so that you can fully enjoy the life you've come here to live. I'm your host, Debbie Pokornik, and today I'd like to share how knowing love languages can help to support your relationships. Most of us are quite familiar with how personality tends to influence how we behave, but there's numerous other qualities that really affect our daily life as well, including love languages. Several years ago, I read a book by Gary Chapman called The Five Love Languages, and it really opened my eyes to yet another aspect of how we might be different from the other people in our lives. Being self-aware is a huge part of standing in your power and bringing out your vibrant and powerful self. So understanding love languages and how they apply to you as well as those you love is definitely one way to increase your awareness and build stronger relationships. Becoming aware of your family's primary love languages can be both helpful and rewarding because it will allow you to focus your energy on the language that's going to have the greatest positive influence on the person you're relating to, rather than assuming that they're going to feel love the same way that you do. It also allows you to share with your significant others so that they know how to love you and so that they become aware of any things that they might be doing that are like triggers for you or make you feel unloved most easily. So let's talk about the way we love. Your love languages actually determine what actions by others are going to help you feel loved. In other words, they dictate the way you receive love the easiest. And this will also be your first choice for how you try to show others that you love them. This was really exciting for me to learn because, first off, I hadn't really thought about what kinds of actions helped me to feel loved. So becoming aware of that allowed me to really appreciate who I am and what I need in this area. It was also enlightening to learn that my husband speaks a whole different language. So what I was doing to express my love to him wasn't hitting the mark nearly as accurately as using his own language would. So let me share the languages as I understand them. And please keep in mind, if you're familiar with Gary Chapman's work, that I've been using his material for almost 20 years, and I'm giving you my version of his categories, which is slightly different from his own work. So the first category is the visual. A visual is a person who feels most loved when she receives things that she can see. So these might be gifts, love notes, even a clean house, a thoughtful dinner on the table, giving them a card for something. These are all important to a visual. An auditory, on the other hand, needs to hear that you love them. They feel most loved when you say things like, "I love you. You look great. I love spending time with you." They do well in any relationship that shares verbal praise. So if you picture your child, see how your child does when you give them praise. If they puff all up and you could just see the joy, the love that they feel, then you know that that's probably at least one of their love languages. The third one is the kinesthetic, and I refer to them as the toucher. They require physical contact, like hand-holding, hugs, running your fingers through their hair, a gentle massage, a back scratch. Now, I have to share an extra word about touchers because the kind of touch I'm talking about here isn't sexual. We're talking about loving touch. So your erotic blueprint dictates what you like in the bedroom or whatever room you're being erotic in. Your love language is a whole different thing. I find it usually helps when I ask people to think about a kinesthetic child, and it will help them to understand the category better because when you focus on your life partner, you might think of it a little bit differently. But think of that child. If they're kinesthetic, they're going to want to sit right beside you, maybe even sit on your lap. They will like to hold your hand. They'll love it when you rub their back. They love hugs. They feel loved when you touch them. So hopefully that will help to clarify for you. The digital is the final category, and I call them the digital connectors. They respond well to shared laughter, meaningful conversation, and quality time together. They need to feel like you're connected to them and that you care about what's going on in their life. Now, just to be clear here, this doesn't mean that an auditory isn't going to, say, appreciate a gift or you spending time asking questions about their day or giving them a back rub. Okay, they can love all these things. It just means that if you really want to help them feel loved, especially when they're feeling stressed or maybe you've been having a bit of an argument with them, you want to use their language first because that will have the greatest impact. So those are the four types that I like to use. Chapman actually has five or maybe even more, and he calls some of them by different names. But the main idea certainly came from his work. So if you're curious about what I just shared, or maybe you're questioning some of it, or you want to learn more, check out Chapman's book because he has a whole bunch of books actually, and he's an absolute expert on this topic. I also want to point out that it's not my intention here to fit anyone into a box. You may be a variety of all types. What I would like to do is help you to understand yourself and your loved ones just a little bit better. And we can best do that by starting with precise categories or boxes, if you will, and then allowing you to pick out the pieces that apply to you and your family to get the real picture of what's going on. In my experience, people actually have more than one. They have a primary and a secondary love language. Like I say, that doesn't mean you can't receive love through the other avenues. It just means that those will be the two that you go to the most easily and that love you receive love the most easily from. Now, let's talk for a moment about when things contradict your love language. Because if a note or a gift makes you feel loved, then an angry note, you know, the one that you write in all capital letters and maybe put 3 exclamation points at the end and underline it. And then if you leave that note for your visual child, that's going to really make them feel the opposite of love, which is unloved. So when you think about that, feeling unloved, that feels like being rejected, feels like being disliked, it feels like being cut off from others. And that's definitely not how we want to make them feel. So it's really important that you notice what your child's language is and what your partner's language is, and then figure out, okay, so what would be the contrary to that? And try to avoid doing those things because you will really dig deep when you do those things. So here's just a few examples. The visual. Coming home to a messy house, for example, if that is important to them, that can feel like you don't love them. Receiving nothing important for life milestones, maybe graduation or a birthday or an anniversary or something, can be very upsetting to a visual because a card is a visual thing. An auditory, on the other hand, can be really hurt by you using a disapproving tone of voice or set of words that are really upsetting to them. The kinesthetic toucher can be hurt by you jokingly giving them a push or shrugging their hand off. Maybe they put their hand on your shoulder and you shrug it off because you have sunburn, for example. That can feel like serious rejection to them. And finally, the digital can be really bothered if you don't ever ask what they're doing, ask them how their day went, if you don't know who their friends are or what they're doing, or when something important is happening in their life. So let me give you an illustration, because I know this is a lot of information and I want to help create a picture for you. So in my life, I'm a digital auditory. I need to hear that I'm loved, and I need to receive verbal compliments. Now, this is not about vanity or self-worth. It's how I'm wired to feel loved. So when I hear these things, I feel like that other person cares for me. Now, I also thrive when I get quality time with my loved ones. I need to feel like we're connecting with each other. And you know, this is even true if I'm speaking in front of a group of people, and if it feels to me on stage like we're not connecting, I have to work really hard to keep myself standing there talking and not run out of the room, because that sense of connection is so important to me. Thankfully, I know about this. So, you know, it's a pretty critical thing to know when you're a speaker. My husband is more of a kinesthetic visual. So he likes touch, like a little shoulder rub, or if I come up and hug him from behind. He also feels loved when things are done for him. So this is like the visual, okay? But rather than gifts, because he gets excited about some gifts, but for the most part, no, gifts aren't that important to him. Acts of service are important to him. So for example, when we go on a detox together and we care about what we eat, we pay more attention, then I'll make lunch for him. And he loves that. It's not just about someone doing another job for him. He just feels really loved by that gesture. Now, this isn't about gender roles and expectations and him having an idea of what a good wife is. But when he comes home for supper and there's supper made and it's on the table, well, it doesn't have to be on the table, but just made, just planned, like I have a plan for it, or if the house is relatively tidy, he feels loved by that. He is wired to feel this way. When he feels stressed, unloved, or frustrated, he speaks in shorter clip sentences. So he explains less. He doesn't want to chat. I call this efficiency zone. And it would be a really big problem for me if I wasn't aware of it. Not just the tendency of his, but the fact that I'm an auditory means that it really, really would affect me. Now, remember I said that how we feel loved is also how we tend to express love to others? Well, let me point out that although I love having someone clean the house and do the dishes, those are not things I'm good at. Even being in the kitchen, I'm not really great at making supper. I love having other people do it, but it doesn't make me feel loved. It simply helps to release me from these repetitive tasks that I don't really enjoy. Okay, so I love that something that has to happen is getting done, but I don't feel more loved by it. On the flip side, giving my husband compliments or saying that I love him or asking a ton of questions about his day to really connect, that's not going to fill up his love tank. Okay, so it's really important that we both know this about each other, especially because when we're trying to fix a momentary misunderstanding, we're most likely to use our own love language. So looking at this, you can probably see how it'd be very easy for our relationship to derail and just never get back on track if we were totally unaware. So let me show you how this would work. Let's say one night my hubby comes home. He's exhausted from a stressful day at work. He doesn't get home at the same time every day. And on this particular day, he walks into the house and I'm still at my desk working. He goes into the kitchen and he notices not only is there no supper, but there's not even anything out defrosting, which means there's probably not a supper plan. Now, he feels a little miffed. He probably thinks it's because he's hungry, he's stressed, he's tired. But in reality, it's at least in part because no supper, if supper makes him feel loved, then no supper makes him feel rejected or unloved. And when you feel disliked or rejected, like the ego is not fond of these feelings, so it can be a really big problem. So I hear him banging around in the kitchen, and so I quickly realize that, oh my gosh, I didn't have any supper planned or anything. And so I finish up what I'm doing and I head into the kitchen and I say, hey, welcome home. Can I help? And he looks at me and says, no, I'm good. Now, he wasn't really speaking meanly, but remember, I'm an auditory, right? So as soon as he says those words and it comes out in a kind of harsh tone of voice, I feel rejected. Now, he's just sharing the simple truth. He's actually great in the kitchen. He's a much better cook than I am. And because of his singular focus, which is part of the male wiring, okay, he doesn't need or want my help at the moment. But because I'm an auditory, his words feel harsh, and now it's my ego's turn to feel rejected. So without awareness, there's a good chance that I'd be stung by this action and disappear to lick my wounds, or I'd strike out at him. Well, you don't have to be rude. And he might respond with, well, I'm hungry. And, you know, we end up having a blowout over something as silly as him saying words that sounded harsh to me. So let's just say in this scenario, I don't say anything. I go, I lick my wounds, and a few minutes later, supper's ready. He calls me to the table and he says it as if all's great. Supper's ready. Now, I'm still hurting. Not enough to turn down a meal, don't get me wrong, but enough to make me feel standoffish. So I don't smile. I don't create conversation. And I don't provide feedback or ask questions about his day. Now, he doesn't know what's going on. He's already dealt with his frustration that supper was not made, and he's moved on. He's not even aware that his words were harsh, because they probably weren't. Even if they were, he's not even aware. So he tries to lighten the mood by talking about his day, sharing stories from work, maybe bringing up something he saw in the news because he knows that I don't watch the news, and so on. The digital part of me that needs connection has unplugged, kind of like a plug being pulled right out of the wall. So unless he makes an effort to plug me back in, I am cold as ice. So maybe he says, how was your day? Fine, I'd respond. Well, what's wrong? Nothing, I say, feeling tears, you know, in my eyes, because I am hurt. But there really isn't anything wrong. I mean, he came home, he made supper. I know that logically. So at this point, he's tuned in that there's something going on. He might get up and start doing dishes, because unconsciously, this is how he shows love. Now, depending on how hurt I was to begin with, I might see this as further disconnection. Oh yeah, leave the table, go do the dishes, right? Now the digital side of me is really sulking, which means there's even less touching and more of a cold shoulder where he's concerned. So all of his unconscious efforts to love me by making supper, cleaning things up, they're actually making things worse. And hopefully he's learned by now, but what if he decides to come over and try to give me a hug or massage my shoulders? Two things that I would love normally, but they're not my love language, and they don't work when I'm in ice mode. So over time, patterns can be created, misunderstandings would build up, and we'd be drifting into relationship breakdown mode. So can you see how this could be a really big problem? Now, what's really amazing is that once you learn love languages, this whole cycle can be circumvented. So for example, since I know that supper is important to him, I could address it as soon as he walks in. Hey, welcome home. Sorry, there's no supper ready. I had a lot going on and I haven't gotten there yet. He's a mature adult. He gets it. He doesn't have expectations of me having supper ready as soon as he gets home. He just feels more loved when it is. Now, even better, if I was to get up, go over, give him a hug before saying this to him, then I'm connecting with him. I'm helping him to feel loved. Now, let's just say I miss this window of opportunity. when I hear him banging around in the kitchen, I could go and join him there. And if he's not at a critical point in cooking, I could go up and give him a hug from behind while he's making supper and say, "Can I help?" He might still respond in that same clip sentence. "Nope, I got it under control." And I could address that right away, assertively, if I need to. "You know what? I'm not sure of your intention, but the voice you just used felt harsh. Are you angry with me?" He might respond with a, "No, I'm just tired and had a stressful day. I'm sorry if my voice sounds harsh." Or if he's really hurting, he might actually reply, "Well, I'm starving," which is to me insinuating, "I've gotten home, there's no supper, and I'm really hungry. I'm frustrated. I have to make it." I can then tune in and I can say something like, "Huh, I guess it doesn't help for you to come home and find that supper isn't ready if your day was already stressful. Sorry about that. How about I do dishes while you focus on that and let me know if you change your mind about the help?" Can you see how this conversation can clear the air, help us to connect, which my digital absolutely loves, and even pull him out of whatever slump he might be slipping into? Even if he didn't catch on right away, or if I didn't use my assertiveness skills, he might have stopped the pattern later when he realized that I come to the table as his ice queen. And so he could say something like, "You know, I just realized I've been pretty focused since coming home on my own day. Tell me about yours. How did the meeting go at the school?" Bonus points for him with the digital part of me if he remembers what my day was about, what thing was going on that I might have been feeling stressed about. And if he says this in a concerned and caring voice, wow, even better. Another example, when he was kind of terse with me and he saw me tense up, even if he didn't mean to be terse, he might come over and pull me into a hug, which is his language, right? And say something like, "I'm sorry, that came out snappier than I intended. Come here, my beautiful wife, and tell me how your day was." The auditory in me feels loved by the compliment, even if I know that I haven't showered and that I don't look great at the moment. It doesn't matter. It's how I feel loved. So it hits me that way. And you know what? If that comment makes me laugh, which it probably would, then the digital feels connected too. So it's a win-win in that situation. Now, my point isn't to tell you how to fix misunderstandings, because we all know that there's so many factors that can play into something like this. What I want to highlight is that when you are aware of the love languages and which one your partner falls into, you can use this awareness to help you get things back on track before the whole evening is lost. Learning which love languages your family falls into can save you a ton of time, energy, and misunderstandings. When you speak a person's language, they will feel your love much more potently than if you speak just in your own language. Unless, of course, you share the same love languages, and then that's absolutely awesome. So let me give you just a really quick kid's guide, all right? For your visual child, put notes in their lunchbox. Pick them up those little trinkets at the dollar store. Remember cards for special occasions. For your kinesthetic child, give them back rubs or scratching their back, hugs, physical play. These things are going to be very important to them. And be really careful not to like bat their hand away when they go to hold your hand just because you're busy. With your auditory child, use praise, use words of love. Try to keep a light-hearted tone and recognize that when you don't use a friendly voice, when you use a harsh voice, they are really gonna feel it. And then with your digital child, make and keep promises for quality time together. Never slough that off. If you've made a promise and then you come back and figure out that, you know, you have to work or something, don't say to them, "Well, you know, mommy has to work to put food on the table. I'm doing this for you." That's all about you. It will not reconnect your digital child. Remember their friends' names. Remember what they're up to and make a point of laughing together. If this topic piques your interest, I strongly suggest you pick up one of Chapman's books or look online for his personal assessment tool. This will help you figure out your family's languages and tailor your efforts to what they need most from you. Doing this will help you understand yourself so you can make sure your needs are being met, which is part of standing in your power and being the vibrant and powerful person you've come here to be. With much respect for you and the journey you are on, this is Debbie Pokornik wishing you a vibrant and powerful day.
You've been listening to Vibrant, Powerful Moms with host Debbie Pokornik. If you've enjoyed this show, please give us a shout out and leave us a positive review. To find out more about Debbie and her sisterhood of Vibrant, Powerful Moms, visit empoweringenergy.com. That's empowering with letters NRG.com.
This is Debbie Pokornik with a moment for standing in your power. When I ask women to stand in their power pose, they often do a Superman stance with shoulders back, tummy sucked in, and head held high. Interestingly, the power center for women is actually in our bellies. In many cultures, we have been taught to suck in our bellies and do exercises to eliminate cushioning around there. We're taught to hate that area if it won't cooperate, and unless we're pregnant, never, ever stick out your belly intentionally. These habits have disconnected us from our main center of power. The belly is the place where our voice of authenticity comes from. Whether you're singing, debating, or passionately discussing a topic, you will feel it when you connect with your power center. The belly is also the area that grounds us. It provides us with balance and connection with Mother Earth. You'll find breathing into your belly or imagining a cord that goes down from your belly through your tailbone and out into the earth to be a common practice when you participate in things like yoga, tai chi, and other mind-body connecting exercises. The very fact that the belly is the area where a baby develops from a fertilized egg into a little being with all sorts of body parts should remind us that this area is a pretty amazing place. Yet, aside from pregnancy, we rarely worship our bellies. My suggestion is that we stop dissing our bellies and start loving them, however they look. Embrace the beauty and power that emanates from this area. When you're ready, stick out your belly and feel the power.